I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 608. Deadline has the D word in it for a reason. This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the original.
The fucking original.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
I have had coffee.
I have had water.
See? And you know what? Now we're hydrated.
Well, yeah, sure.
Well, mostly hydrated. But we've got a great show for you this week. We got a bunch of stuff to talk about. Like, so many things. So many things. I almost don't know where to start, but I actually do know where I want to start. I want to start with anime.
Okay.
Because we haven't done that in a bit. And then we got some game stuff. Both of us have game stuff.
Yes.
Which is cool. But I want to jump right in because I have been watching this anime that I thought completely was going to be something else. I don't know why I thought it was going to be something else. And it is absolutely something else. But I love it. So I was going through a, hey, let me take a break on Assassin's Odyssey right now, because this is a huge, big old game, and, like, I need, like, a minute, or, like, 15, to just kind of, like, step back from it, you know, when you're on the grind to get your XPs up, and sometimes you just need, like, a break for your brain and also your hands.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, let me go check out some anime, and I'm going to find something that I've, like, haven't ever heard of before or watched. And just simply based on the art for the series alone, like, I'm not going to look at the description. I'm just going to jump in and watch an episode. You know how you play anime roulette like that sometimes?
Yes, I do.
All right, so I jumped into this anime called Zombieland Saga. And the art for it showed a bunch of high school looking girls. So I'm like, oh, maybe this is something like they get transported to a land full of zombies and they have to navigate it. And, you know, they're all being, you know, cute, high schooly girly about it and trying to figure stuff out, whatever. That could be fun. Like, I could go for something like fun light like that, right?
Yes.
Okay. So the series starts off and it focuses on this girl named Sakura, who is getting ready to go to an idol audition.
Okay.
You know, she's bubbly, redheaded, big blue-eyed, you know, girl, super, super excited about her audition, putting herself together for the day, getting her outfit going, petting her dog before she leaves and puts on her shoes and tells her parents, okay, I'm off, and runs out the door. And you're like, oh, okay, all right, so this is going to be an idol show. And my brain is like, I'm not exactly sure how zombies fit into this, but maybe, like, the idols get warped to a zombie land and have to perform for zombies and move the crowd that way, right? Like, my brain is trying to put together, just in this, like, quick beginning, because it's so slice of life, how this sweet girl ends up somehow meeting zombies. And just as my brain is, like, formulating that thought, Sakura gets hit by a truck as she's running out of her house. And, like, the world slows down and you see her body going flying and, like, colors start to dissipate from the world and you're like, what is going on? And, like, her body hits the ground and then the scene transitions and she's in this dark room and I'm like, okay, so, this is where, like, she gets transported to another world, right? Because a lot of anime for the last 2 seasons have had people being transported to other worlds, whether it's an in-game world or a fantasy world, parallel world, all that kind of stuff, right?
Right.
So I'm, like, putting it together. I'm like, okay, so this is where she gets transported for some reason to live again in, like, this zombie land, right? And she has to use, like, her perky personality to, like, win over zombies. Like, this is where my brain is still, like, focused that this is how this ties together. But it's a dark, you know, kind of mansion space, and there's, like, a storm going on, and all of a sudden there's movement in her room, and it's a zombie girl, like, coming after her. And she, like, freaks out and tries to run out of the room and runs into another room, and there are two more zombies in that room. And so she runs out of that one, and she's trying to escape this house that she's, like, terrified of. She doesn't know where she is, and, like, finally makes it out of the house, and it's storming outside, and she's running down what appears to be, like, a path that's near water, and gets to a town sign that's underneath a light, and realizes that she's in this Saga prefecture. And she's like, how did I get to Saga? Like, I don't even know what's going on. And a police officer starts coming up to her, who's patrolling, and he's like, hey, miss, are you lost? Do you need some help? And she's like, yeah, I don't know how I got to Saga. And he looks at her, and his face just turns, like, pale, and he's like, what are you? And she's like, what do you mean? And then all of a sudden, the police guy is hit with a shovel and falls to the ground. And she's just like, what is going on? And there's this other guy in glasses looking at her, and she, like, tries to run away. And as she looks over, she sees her reflection, and her reflection is green-skinned.
Oh, okay.
And then, like, she basically passes out and wakes up again, and now you see her actually as she is. Sakura is a zombie.
Okay.
And she's fully awake. And the other zombies that she encountered while she was in the house are other girls, but they haven't, their conscious hasn't woken back up yet. So they're still running around like zombies. So you meet this guy, Kotaro, who is exuberant, you know, above and beyond normal.
Okay.
And he's like, okay, all right, girls. And so let me introduce everybody. And so they're, like, in basically what appears to be, like, a dungeon in this house.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out that Kotaro is the manager of this idol group that he's putting together, this zombie idol group that he's putting together to restore the Saga prefecture. Okay. It's like, this is how we're going to get Saga on the map.
We're going to have an idol group. Idol team.
Right. Because Saga doesn't have an idol group, and this is what's going to restore
tourism
and put us on the map and all this kind of stuff. And so all these zombies, and they're all different girls and one woman from different, like, times in history.
So he's been collecting zombies for a period of time.
Right.
Over the course of time.
Right. And so Sakura's the only one who's, like, awake, so she's sitting in her chair paying attention, and just, like, I don't understand what's going on, like, what the hell is this? And Kotaro was like, okay, so we have our first gig tonight. And again, Sakura's the only one who's awake. And he's like, and it's going to be super awesome. And so this is what we're going to do. And we're getting in the car right now. And she's like, what do you mean we have a gig? Like, they're all zombies. And he's like, oh, they'll wake up, you know, at some point in time. And it's actually really your role. And so he's like, but it's going to be great, right? And she's just looking at him. And he gets closer. And he's like, it's going to be great, right? And she's just looking at him. He's like, I said it's going to be great, right? She's like, I don't know what to do. And she's like, okay, well, I'm going to introduce you to everybody. So everyone is a legendary something or other. There's one woman who was a legendary geisha, basically, songstress from, like, the Shogun era. There's one girl who was a legendary idol who was a TV star. There's another one who was a legendary idol from this other group.
So they're all famous in their own right, but now they are
with
all
the exception,
undead.
Right. With the exception of Sakura and then this one girl, I forget her name right now, who I'm 4 episodes in and she still hasn't consciously woken up yet. And she's like, and then this is legendary, I'm just going to say, Yare-chan. And Sakura's like, why is she legendary? And he's like, because she's legendary Sakura-chan. Legendary Yare-chan. And she's like, okay, but what did she do? And he gets all up in her face. He's like, look, not everybody has to do something to be legendary. But you know what? Because you bring this up, you're not going to be legendary. How about that? You're just going to be Sakura. She's like,
okay.
Right? And so he's like, we're going to put you all in makeup. So they look like normal girls when they go out into public. They look like themselves.
Okay.
And again, this is all just in the first episode. Their gig that night is to do an open mic event at a headbanger club. And Sakura's like,
okay.
We didn't have any rehearsals. Like, I kind of know our like who we are, but, like, what do we do? And Kotaro's like, you'll figure it out. You have to. And so they're all on stage dressed up and they're standing there except for Yari-chan, who's just kind of like walking around eating squid. And Sakura's like, I don't know what to do. I have no idea. And then Kotaro's like, okay, cue music from like behind stage. And like this the headbanger thing music starts playing. And all of the zombie girls who are still not awake just start headbanging real hard. Like their necks flinging all the way back and forward. And the headbanging group is just like loving it because they're like, I've never seen anybody bang so hard. And she's just like, I don't know what to do. And just looking around like a deer in the headlights, and you feel so hard for her. And then one of the zombies grabs a microphone and just starts screaming at the top of her lungs. And everybody in the club goes nuts. She's like, I'm just going to play with it. Let's go with it. So she starts headbanging and screaming, and they like love it. And one of the girls, her head gets knocked off, and they're like, this is so metal. Like, did you see that sleight of hand? Like, that was awesome. Like, how they were hanging that head around. I don't even know how they did that. So, like, everybody so loved their performance.
They're not aware that these are actually, like, undead girls.
They have no idea, right? And so, at the end of the night, like, Kotaro throws everybody in the van. He's like, all right, you did really good. Here we go. He had, like, this really horrible, like, Mutagen Death Maiden name for the group, and everybody in the group is named a number. He's like, that way it won't get confusing, especially because they're not awake yet. And they get in the van and they go back, and Sakura's like, I don't know what it was, but it felt great to be under those lights, and, like, I have to do this again. And at the end of the night, after, like, all of the applause and everything, a couple of the other girls started waking up.
I was about to say, like, we're going to see a series of them slowly waking up.
Yeah.
To their new fate. Yeah,
right. And so it's a really interesting group because there's, like, one girl who was, like, the first girl to ever head a street gang.
All right, so she's, like, a Yakuza?
Yeah, yeah, basically. So there's one girl like that. There's, like I said, the woman who was a legendary geisha, Sakura, the girl who was in an idol group before, the girl who was an idol as an actress. Then there's a young girl, you know, our Super Saccharin, yep, twin tail, Chibi, who okay was popular in TV commercials. And then there is a Yari-chan who we still don't know exactly what it is.
What like, her deal
when
is
they're,
just yet.
Right. Because when they're not in their, like, made up to be out in public costumes and dresses, when they're just hanging out and, like, going through rehearsals and stuff, they're all wearing the clothes that they were wearing basically when they died.
Okay.
And so, like, most of them are school uniforms of some kind. And Yari-chan, the one zombie that still hasn't, like, completely woken up yet, is in what kind of looks like the garb of a woman who is working to become a nun. She looks like she was in some kind of monastery or something like that.
So, okay. So let me make sure I'm getting this yeah whole thing right.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
So Sakura was on her way to an idol audition.
Yep.
And then she died.
Mm-hmm.
Do we see how she died? I don't remember if you mentioned.
Yeah, she was hit by a truck.
Okay, so she's hit by a car.
Like a big white delivery truck.
All right, so does it potentially, because like in my mind, I'm like, okay, so here's this entity who's gathering girls from all these different periods of time to make like this ultimate zombie girl group. Like, I wonder if Kotaro is somehow involved with all of their deaths. Like, he's scouting them in particular for this group. Or if this is, like, how...
Well, he has scouted them all. I don't know if he was, like, responsible for their death, seeing as how he's not super old. I don't think so, because all of these girls were resurrected into zombies, and they all come from different time periods.
So, I just want to know, like, who's doing the resurrection? Is Kotaro aware of, like... Is Kotaro working for whatever the entity is that is,
like,
doing it?
Saki basically... Her gang was formed and she came to, like, the height of her thing in, like, the 90s. I, who was in the idol group, her idol group was, like, from 2008. Junko, who was popular in, like, the 80s. Yugiri was, like, from the Meiji Restoration area. So that's, like, the 19th century.
Right,
so that's, like,
over
100 years,
like,
ago.
It sounds like they're setting up, like, this really, really cute premise, but at the same time, like, you know, okay, they're all from different periods of time,
yeah,
and like they're all being scouted for this thing, but like there's obviously something sinister here, because like these all these people, all these girls are dead.
Right. They're dead, and they've been resurrected into zombies. And, like, at one point, I think it's, like, in the third episode or, like, the fourth episode, I is, like, I don't even understand, like, how we're zombies and, like, how this is all happening right now and we're, like, alive right now because, like, I'm pretty sure that, like, some of us were cremated. And you're like, right? Oh, yeah, like, the fuck? Like, none of that is so far addressed at any point.
I feel like eventually, like, I feel like we're going to see an episode with this. But, like obviously, like, as they're slowly waking up and, like, they slowly resign themselves to the fact that they're undead and, like, this is the only way for them to, like, actually live until they figure out that there's a bigger plan all along for it. We'll find out. But, like, this definitely sounds like something that I should have been watching, like, last
week. You really should have been watching. Like, this is so up your alley, it's kind of ridiculous. And it's just, it's, like, fun. It really is. Like, it's not, like, gruesome or anything like that, but yet again, they're still, you know, Walking Dead. So, like, at one point, Yugiri is like, okay, so, like, we have to do things, and let's make sure that, like, we make sure that this time we don't smell decrepit. And they all start immediately sniffing themselves, like, oh my god, that's right, we're dead. We must smell horrible. So, like, all sniffing themselves, like, trying to figure out, like, how they don't smell, or if they do, like, how they fix it. It's really funny. So it's, like, balancing that, you know, I'm, for the most of them, a teenage girl, dealing with the fact that I'm dead, but now I'm undead.
And now I'm aiming to be famous?
Right. Like, it takes them a little bit to, like, get Saki on board, because, like, not everybody wants to be an idol group. Kotaro arranges another performance that's basically, like, at a retirement home.
Okay.
And, like, two guys who had followed them from their headbanging performance, who become fans of Death Musume, go to the retirement home. They're like, I have no idea why they're here, but hey, I have to see them perform again. And so, like, they're trying to figure out, like, the song, and they hadn't rehearsed, and basically Sake and Sakura get into a fight, and it ends up being a rap battle.
Aha, okay.
Like, they start speaking a little bit in rhyme, and off-screen, Kotaro starts beatboxing onto the mic, and they start having rap battles.
Okay.
And the whole, like, home gets into it.
So they're just going to happenstantially do the thing that people like.
And then one of the girls rips another girl's arm off, and it goes flying around. And so the headbanging guy's like, this is awesome. I didn't even know that I liked hip-hop like this. And it's just, it's really super cute and super funny. And it was, like, the palate cleanser that I really needed, and I lucked into it. Again, because it looks like from the cover art that it's a slice of life piece, but it isn't, because, you know, they're undead zombies. It is quite cute, and it has a really good balance of humor and lightheartedness with, like, some moments of, you know, real self-introspection. Like, Sakura, you know, has this moment where, you know, she's really trying hard and doing the rehearsals because this is the thing that she was dreaming of trying to become, was an idol. And yeah, this isn't the way that she wanted to do it, but she's got to put the effort in because she's been given this opportunity. So she's really trying to be upbeat about everything and put it in because she loved the feeling that she had when she was on stage. And so the group starts coming together and the girls start, you know, talking about the things that were going on in their lives and you know, what it is that they want to do and have some kind of future. And so, you know, maybe this is the way that they can do it and they have to work together. So there's, you know, those moments of, like, slight moments of realness that are very well balanced with just, you know, the manic, over-the-top, like, crazy, humorous. But I can't take this too seriously because y'all are zombies. And one of the zombies is still over in the corner, not awake, eating squid.
Right.
Like, all the time.
More details to follow.
Right. Like, at some point in time, like, maybe she'll wake up. And that's Tei Yamada. She is such a weird character because she eventually, like, by... Like I said, I've watched all four episodes that are currently live, and I've been watching this on Crunchyroll. She is the only one who hasn't regained consciousness yet, and yet she has started, like, when they're doing the rehearsals, she knows all of her movements, so she is moving with the group, and, like, she mouths some words sometimes, but gets into her poses.
She's
and,
the diva. Like,
right.
Like, does she puts in the effort when she feels she wants to put in the effort. It only contributes when she wants to contribute.
And she's the one who ends up, like, naming the group after sucking on a marker, a Sharpie, for a while and sneezing. The way that she sneezes creates their name. So their ultimate name becomes Fran Chuchu.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly. Okay, ha 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 ha. That's pretty much this whole thing. So like I said, the anime is called Zombieland Saga. It's currently airing right now on Crunchyroll. I'm sure it's on other platforms as well, but I'm watching it on Crunchyroll. There are 4 episodes currently live that you can watch if you're a premium member. If you're not a premium member, I believe you can watch the first 2 episodes of the series with commercials. But it is absolutely hilarious. It is a great palate cleanser. And if you just like oddball anime series that have zombies in it or idols in it, then this is a great series to watch.
Okay, then. Well.
So that's my first at bat. What do you have?
So let me talk about some fun party games that are out there for people.
Party.
Because, you know, Halloween's just around the corner. Coming up this week, coming up on Wednesday, I think. And, you know, for those millennials out there who like to go to parties in costume but don't really want to party per se, you know, you could pick up the Jackbox Party Pack 5 and you could play it on Steam. I actually think we're going to see...
Oh, dip! There's a new Jackbox?
There's a new Jackbox, yep. And I actually think you're going to see some Jackbox stuff hit the Nintendo Switch if it hasn't already. But me and my husband have been, like, secretly waiting for this new Jackbox pack to come out because every one of our parties always devolves into either YouTube O'Clock, where everyone's trying to one-up each other on YouTube... You know, the Dark Three.
YouTube Roulette is just, it's a great party game that's not a party game.
It's just like, oh, you think that's weird? Let me show you this. And like, and that just generally happens. But, so it's either that, or it's just Jackbox O'Clock, where we'll boot up a Jackbox pack, and like, the people in the room will participate. You've been at my establishment when we've done
yes.
a couple of games. So
We have done both YouTube Roulette and Jackbox
O'Clock. In the fifth pack, party pack for Jackbox, we got 4 games. I mean, 4 newish games and also another reiteration of You Don't Know Jack. Because,
okay. Yeah.
You know, that's where this all kind of came from, was the You Don't Know Jack and how many iterations of that came. And then this team just kind of found each other and started making, like, really silly games like Drawful or Fibbage mm-hmm. or
yep.
Monster Seeking Monster or let's see, what's another big one that I really, really like? Earwax. Well, actually, I think, sis, you would probably really appreciate Earwax.
Yep.
But in this party pack, we got Patently Stupid, Zeeple Dome, Split the Room, Madverse City, and like I said, another version of You Don't Know Jack. I have played of this pack now 4 of the 5 games, and I kind of want to talk about each of them from my perspective, just a little bit.
Okay.
So, obviously, You Don't Know Jack is essentially trivia, but it's like, it's a really clever way of having trivia where they're asking you a simple question, but they're masking it in hopes to trip you up. So, like, you really have to know what the question is that they're asking you, whether it's like that we had one question that was math related. And it's like, if the sum of these dumplings, these dim sumplings are this, what's the product of it? And I'm like, fuck, math, no. I don't remember what product means. Is it multiplication? Is it division? No. And like, you get points and for every incorrect answer, you get negative points, depending on how bad your answer is. Mm-hmm. And for the first few rounds of that, Panda was doing no bueno. I'm just not good with misleading trivia. Like, I want to know exactly what you're asking, and I want to know, like, the topic, because they vary the topics from each category and stuff like that. But that's just a standard Jackbox. So if you've ever played one, you've definitely played this. So then we played another one, Zeeple Dome, and okay. I think it's definitely not my favorite of the pack. Where literally, you are this human, you're a random colored human, and I think it's like red, green, blue, yellow. And like, on your phone, you are literally launching yourself to hit things in this dome. And at first, like, it's just, can you hit this blue ring over here? And now, what if things could fight back? And like, you're just constantly flinging yourself all over the map, and it doesn't resonate with me, mm-hmm. personally. But I mean, like, if you get a bunch of people on the screen, like, it could kind of be fun. Like, I could see where they were kind of going with it. And then there's another one called Patently Stupid, which literally, like, you are pitching an invention. So, like, you have to create this problem, and you have to solve it, and then the other people either want to invest in your product or not. So, like, you literally get a blank, like, oh, I really miss blank. So, of course, because, you know, we're all millennials and most of these games always devolve to one of three things, boobs and different parts of genitalia for those young. It always devolves into that, butt o'clock, lady part o'clock, or dude part o'clock. And in this particular game, it was like, oh, man, I really miss my wang. And, like, there's your problem. And then we all have to make inventions to solve the problem. So, like, it was like, I keep missing my wang. So, like, I made a product called Boner Beeper, where you have, and you have to draw. Like, you literally have to name it and then design it. And then you have to, you can choose to have the game pitch it for you, or you could actually, like, pitch it to the room. So, like, the game can go relatively fast or relatively slow, depending on how many people you have. But, like, since this is a brand new pack, we didn't realize that that was a function. So, like, we were all just letting the game pitch it for us, which definitely does eat into your time. Like, it's definitely a very long-form game. And, like, if you are really good with improv, then you probably want to take the approach of presenting your product yourself, personally. But anyway, so I did, like I said, a boner beeper, in which then I, like, drew a guy with a beeper, and then, like, the tasteful side ball of a peen under a couch with like some green waves, like it was being beeped, like beep beep, like a clicker. And I was like one of the last ones to present. Someone else had done like a dicker clicker. It had a, and you have to give it a tagline also. So like,
yeah, you gotta have the full you pitch.
Definitely, like, if you come to play, like, it gets funny really fast. One of the problems was, I just want to safely masturbate. So one of the guests literally did this thing called Safe Hump. It's like, his tagline was so funny. It was like, you know, it was like slide and glide or something like that. And like, we're just rolling, laughing. Because, I mean, like, the drawing just looked like, I mean, it just looked like a bad taco. But you kind of got what he was going for. And, like, I mean, like, that game is definitely meant to be played with, like, maybe a max of four people. And we had, like, eight at the time. So, like, that game ran insanely long. And I think if you're not having people personally pitching their things, the repetition of the game doing it can get kind of repetitive and can pull you out of the experience. But, like, if you've got a core group of people who have really dumb ideas or really great ideas and just can't draw, then that's a fun game to, like, start. And then another game, which I definitely want to boot this up and have you do this, because, one, you're going to be really good at it. And I have now proven that I ain't got no flow. It's whack, like a puddle. But anyway, the game is called Madverse City. And you are essentially a mecha MC, and you're battling other mecha MC.
Yeah, and I've seen this game.
And yeah, well, you know, at like 12 o'clock at night, when you've had a couple of drinks, you think you're the next Eminem. And then
I'm not the next Eminem. I don't have flow like that. I know you think I do, but I don't.
No, but I'm really just saying, I think people build themselves up like, yeah, I can rhyme. That's what rapping is. And like, and it's pretty much like a Mad Lib, but with rapping. And you pick your robot, and you destroy parts of town, and then you engage in your rap battles against other robots. And what it will do is it will set you up with a part of a rap, and then it will tell you, like, oh, give me an indicative noun, which at midnight, no one can remember what the F an indicative noun is. But like, and I'm like, I don't know what it means. I don't know what noun it wants. I don't, okay. And like, so at one point I got one, it was like, name a TV actor and the show they're in. And it was like, you know, I learned everything that I know. And I was like, from Anthony Anderson, Black-ish. And then I was like, cause now I know how to talk about Black-ish. Like that's like black shit.
Nice. Like nice. That's good.
I thought, right? But remember, you're a robot. So then when your robot says your flow, because it's a robot voice, it doesn't know where to put the cadence. So it doesn't flow right. And then you can't decide what your robot sounds like. So like I thought it was straight flames. And like I had the robot that had the kid voice, and I'm like, oh, sit down. Be humble. Like, I can't even deal with it. And, like, it was really funny because, like, I was trying to go for, like, whoever I was battling against. Like, I was trying to, like, you know, fight them, like, rap battle.
Yeah, you gotta make it personal.
Mm-hmm. Like, just a little
best
bit.
Best flows. That's how you have rap beefs.
Right? But, like, everyone else that I was battling with was, like, making food rhymes. Because I think at that time of night, people were just really hungry. And, like, people were just thinking about food. And we're just finding the easiest rhymes. But, like, and you could, like, send up, like, horns and stuff. Like, you could, like, encourage the rappers or you could boo them. And, like, we had, because we had an odd number of people, we had the computer playing. The computer's flow was so much better than anything we could write.
No!
And I was like, that's really sad. They should really, like, put a number generator in the computer so that the computer doesn't always rhyme effectively. Like, it should mess
up,
too.
Well, I'm just going to say that that's probably your game, because I watched, I think it was Kitty Cat Gaming, play that game, and they also had an odd number because they had seven people, and the computer was the eighth, and the computer didn't always make good rhymes.
Okay, well, ours was just, that maybe it was just a fluke, because Gene kept coming for us. And I'm like,
it's
wow.
Bad when you got Gene coming for you.
Yeah.
With straight, like, fire.
Damn, Gene. Like, straight flames. Bam, 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 bam. Like, come
World
on.
Star!
And, like, and I think as you're playing through, like, you have options where you could be destroying the city from your sick flows. And we didn't really understand that concept, because literally it was like, oh, just, like, pick a place and you would, like, tap it on your phone. And we didn't realize till nearly the end, if you multiply tap that, you're actually doing the destruction.
Because,
like,
okay.
you're a giant mecha. Like, you're the size of a skyscraper. Like, these verses should be, like, blowing up buildings, which is, I think, what that little side twist of the game is supposed to be. But it just didn't translate. But, I mean,
gotcha.
You like Transformers. You like rapping. You're probably better at it than I am. So I definitely
possibly
think I gotta get you in the booth to hear your straight robot flames. And that's the game to do it.
You need to hear my mecha bars.
Yeah, your mecha bars, son. World Star. And then the last one in the Jackbox Party Pack 5 is a game called Split the Room, which I went to bed at this point, but I asked everybody about it this morning because the rest of the group played it. And like, I had seen some reviews where a lot of people were like, if you have a lot of people, like if you don't have enough people for Split the Room, like it just doesn't. It doesn't lend itself for a small size. Like, you want a lot of people for it. So literally, what you do in Split the Room is you're trying to make, like, a really hard, like, would you rather, and get people to, you're effectively just trying to split the public opinion between these two things. So, like, you get a Mad Lib, and the other person gets a Mad Lib, and, like, you have to find, like, the what you think would be the best thing that would cause the room to split in opinion. And then that you vote on, like, the best one. And, like, at first I wasn't sure if I would like that. But from what apparently happened last night when Panda decided to go to bed at 1 a.m., which for a 34-year-old person is, like, way past my bedtime by, like, a lot of hours. I'm feeling it today. I feel like I want to jump into playing Split the Room. Anyway, it is available right now. There's a lot in the Jackbox universe, like, that are really good games from other packs also. I really wish Dev House there would actually just put all of these packs together in, like, a multi-pack. And I know that, like, this is the cost way for them to get, like, their money. Like, I understand the marketing strategy as to why they don't. But, you know, most people who have been on the Jack tip for a while, like, every time a pack comes out, like, they get a lot of sales, like, right off the bat. So, like, if they just made, like, a client that could, like, run all of them. Like, if they made that aspect better as opposed to loading each individual one, because, like, they separate all the different games between the packs. So, like, maybe I want to play Drawful, and then I want to play Murder Trivia, and, like, or maybe now I want to play, you know, Monster Seeking Monster. And, you know, the fact that I have to jump between five different packs gets kind of tedious. So, I mean, in most of our cases, like, we'll be like, guys, which games do we really want to play multiples of? Because then we'll just open up one of the packs instead of, like, going through and having multiple versions of it up. Because, like, that can get kind of tedious. So, I mean, I would really love to see you know, Jackbox kind of like make a client that allows that if you have them all, you can just access them from that. Because I think one, that would just elevate the party sitch, like straight up to like DJ Khaled status, like another one, another one, another one, another one. And like, I could see the countless hours of fun if they made the availability just a little bit better. But you can buy a code for the pack 5 for Steam. I think that's going for about $25. You can get that for PS4, Xbox, Switch, your Apple TV, Amazon Fire. You can get it for your computer. You can get it for Infinity. And they, you know, they also just have it at the Apple Store. So like, you can, there's no way to not have access to these games.
Right.
And if you know, if your party's suffering from suckitude, like, this is a great way to get a whole room full of people in on the same tip.
Yeah, because that's the thing that I like about Jackbox games is that there's enough games, you know, when you've collected enough of the collections, a variety that there's a game for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, like whether it's the trivia or it's, you know, the...
The one I talked to you earlier about called Earwax. Like I said, like, I know that you like, you know, audio and music and musical...
We've played Earwax like before at your house.
So, like for me, like, there are certain games when I think of them, I'm like, oh, she would so dig that. Like, right. There's one called Bidiots where you have to draw art. Like, they give you a clue or a suggestion on what to paint. Like, it would be, like, man on bike. And, like, you'd, like, draw, like, a stick figure on a bike. And then, like, you guys are artists, but you're also bidding on art for art critics. So, like, you'll get a critic on your phone who's like, I'm really looking to get a modern art piece for under $2,000. And you all have, like, a certain amount of money to start. And you have paddles that are all shaped differently. And literally, you're bidding against your other friends for art. But you don't know whose art it is. So, like, right. You're trying to get the most money, like, and you're trying to get your art to sell for the most money so that you can get money back. So, like, it's just really hilarious because, one, you know, most people don't draw or can't draw very well. Right. So, like, you're trying
especially in a short period of time on a mobile device.
Yeah, exactly. Like, now I just want to bring, like, a,
You should always have a stylus in your pocket.
Always have a stylus so I can draw better. I draw fairly well with my fingers. But it's really funny because at some point in the game, when you run out of money, you can't bid anymore. So obviously your critics and the people who have, like, charged you to go and are mad at you. And, like, in between each of the auctions, there's, like, these little bump outs, like, commercials for, like, a loan company. And they're called, like, predatory loans. And, like, yes. it's a shark. And, like, the taglines are always different, but they're always, like, because you ran out of money and you need it. And, like, it kind of, like, all those cash money nows. Like, I need my annuity and I need cash now kind of deal. And, like, they just get more and more perpetually funny. And you have to call them to give you money. And, like, the commercials like to, like, rub it in that someone had to call. So, like, you don't want to be the person who has to call. And they don't really explicitly call you out when you do it. But people are aware that somebody's in debt. So, like, it's just this really funny thing that's going on. And, I mean, at first I don't think I cared for it, but with, like I said, with the right group of people, like, all of a sudden, like, you're overbidding and you know you are, but you're just in that heated, you know, hand flip. And, like, I've never
gone to because you're overbidding because you're trying to get the price up because it's actually your art and you're hoping that you don't get stuck paying that high price for your own
art. Which has happened, like, a couple of times.
Yep.
I mean, like, it's such a funny situation because I think in reality when people think about, like, auctions, like, they don't see the comedy in it. And I think Jackbox games in particular find a really great way of bringing comedy to, like, the most mundane things.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, oh my God, like, I totally would never have thought, like, a dating app, like, I mean, not that I date anymore because I'm happily married, but for those who are out there in the dating scene, like, oh, by the way, you're also monsters and you have certain abilities and you have an agenda and it's also, like, you know, you're a monster. And you're trying to date is also kind of funny. Or, you know, Earwax where you're depicting...
Monsters need love too.
They do. They do. Or like Fibbage, which is one of my favorites, which I haven't talked about on the show at all. But pretty much what you do is you write a lie and you write a truth and people have to guess what is true. And like they write their own lies about things too. And like they try to trick other people into believing their lies. And they have a variation of that where it's Fibbage About You, where you write truths and lies about you and your friends write lies about you and people have to discern what is true. I just love that because
I enjoy Fibbage.
Oh my god, a lot. I enjoy it so much with you.
And Fibbage About You. I enjoy both of those games
every time we're playing it. I'm like, can we play Fibbage About You? Because one, I just love it because it gives me an ability to possibly learn something new about people that I invest a lot of my time into. And also, I always challenge myself to ask, like, put something out there that my friends may not know about me and see if people mm-hmm. can kind of infer.
Right.
Which doesn't always happen. But I mean, well, then you...
The nice thing is that whether you're telling a truth or a lie, you still learn something about somebody.
Right.
Because most of the time, people will put out lies that they've heard about themselves. They're like, wow, people assume this about you or like that, and it's not true. And either I know it to not be true, or I was one of the people who like thought it might be true, or you learn the truth. So like either way, you learn about your friends.
Yes.
Which is dope.
So I absolutely 100% always... I'm encouraging my husband to, like, bring his computer so that we can play Jackbox games on Steam, because that's what we use to play it. The new one is out, and it's, like, these are definitely far longer form games. Like, these are not mm-hmm. as quick as, like, a Drawful is, or a Fibbage is, or a Bidiots can be. So, I mean, like, if you're looking for more long form games, then the fifth pack is definitely for you.
Okay.
I would say if you're new to the whole Jackbox thing, I would not recommend this as your first.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of nuances to these games that I think people who do these games a lot kind of jump in like, oh, okay, I can already tell this is going to be long format. I already can tell that there's like several layers to this version of the game, of this game.
They're not jump-in games.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's fair. I think they're easy to digest, but like if you're going to jump into this fifth pack as your first, it should be the first thing you play. And, like, give people a taste of what the long form is and then jump into, like, the second pack or the third pack and then see what the lighter games, the more approachable games are like. But, like,
nope.
fun was being had by all. So that's the big takeaway, is that it's absolutely as fun.
Yeah, Jackbox is a great party game. What I would say is, you know, one of the things I don't think that you've touched on is that, you know, you have the ability to have private and public games. So when you start up a game, you're given a room code, and you can either just give that room code to your friends that are in the room with you, or your friends that are, you know, remote, but that you want to play with you, and just keep the game to just you guys, or you can put that code out into the world and then other people who you don't know can audience participate play along with you. So it becomes, you know, either a small group activity or it can be like a huge group activity.
Right.
Like I love playing the trivia game when there's, you know, the people that I'm playing with and also the audience, because then they become, you know, like an extra character that you're either playing against or with or like rooting for.
Right.
Like in some games where like the trivia game where like I usually die around, you know, question 4 or 5 because I get tripped up on some things.
Oh my god, yeah, the trivia murder.
Yeah.
I love playing the trivia murder game, especially around Halloween, only because, you know, it's like, oh, it's murder, it's scary, mm-hmm. even though it's really not scary.
Not. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I really love the attention to the comedy detail that Jackbox gives, and believe it or not, a lot of the voice actors that they use in their games, one, work for Jackbox Games, and also, if you are someone who loves to listen to podcasts, some of the main big voices that you hear in Jackbox Games are actually in the Magic Tavern, which is a podcast about a man who falls through a magical portal outside of a Burger King and gets trapped in a mystical land of Foon, and he's been trapped there for like 2 years now, and like he meets a warlock and kind of a shifter. And, like, he does the podcast with them because he conveniently had all of his podcasting gear when he went through this dimensional portal. And so, literally, he's, like, talking about his experiences in Foon, and he has met countless, you know, people who come into this tavern. And he interviews them about their lives in Foon. And, like, there's a lot of really great continuity because the man who fell through the dimensional portal is married. And, like, apparently, like, he's like, I'm really worried that my wife, like, thinks I'm dead and I have a kid and my kid doesn't know me. And... like, the sorcerer's like, yeah, we should probably find a way to figure out how to get you home. And, like, the guy's like, or not. So, like, it's, like, really kind of really funny. And, like, they're all from improv groups in the Chicago-ish area, it seems. So, like, mm-hmm. it's a great way to perpetuate different talents outside of what they do. So, yeah, like, you could totally check out that show. Me and my husband listen to it when we're in the car for more than, like, 40 minutes because it's just really funny and talk about, like, world building. In a podcast format, it's like really inventive. So, but check out Jackbox Games if you've never really played one. Like, even if you want to jump into a random sesh, you will see what we mean.
Yeah. You can search Twitter and Instagram for hashtag Jackbox Games, because a lot of people, when they're playing the game, especially streamers, will put their room code out there to get people into the audience. So, like, from your mobile phone, you don't have to do anything except have a browser available to connect to the game. Like, there's not a separate app that you have to get or whatever. You just have to go to the URL and put in the game code, and you can play the game, so you can play along. So you can play this game without ever purchasing it, which is awesome as well.
Yeah.
You can just jump into random games and experience it. I highly recommend it. I've done that a couple of times when some of my favorite streamers are playing. If I have the ability to, you know, see their code when they're playing and get into the audience, I've had a great time doing that, because it's just like a really good, fun party game time. It's not, you know, anything that you have to be super invested in, but once you jump in, you're having such a good time, you will
be. You're going to invest. Like, yeah, you're going to end up investing.
You didn't think that we weren't going to talk about Red Dead Redemption 2 in some way, shape, or form, right?
I mean, in all honesty, I was aiming to kind of, like, sidestep it, because, I mean, like, hype train is hype train, choo-choo, all aboard. Like,
chugga-chugga-choo-choo.
It got, like, really intense, where literally, I think the minute it released, people already had, like, dank memes.
Yes.
Of like, hey, hon, it's our anniversary, where are you taking me out to dinner tonight? And then you see, like, a dude slowly raising up RDR2. And I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, snap. That's right, shit's happening for real now. And I mean,
yeah,
it was actually...
The one that I saw going around a crazy ton across all my social feeds was like a couple where the woman was like, tie me up and do whatever you want to me tonight.
And he tied her up and left her there to play RDR2. It's like, leave me alone. And I mean, like, this game has been long coming for a while. And I mean, believe it or not, I want to say, like, literally leading up to its launch, there was like a big snafu that kind of hit, you know, the medias a bit, and people were just like munching on it, because, you know, the internet is a place where, you know, truth lives, and opinions,
and also lies. Let's be fair.
Fake news and lies. Fake news becomes real news, and real news becomes lies, and people can say whatever they want whenever they want. I mean, especially
except
in this
if you live in China,
you know. Especially in this particular culture, like in this game culture, like, you know, people have become more and more aware of development houses and mm-hmm. practices and
policies, you know, procedures,
and all of that. And
I mean, we just talked about all the stuff that went down with, you know, Telltale.
Yeah, exactly. And it seems like when one of the big guys shows their butthole, like, everyone is like, hey, did you see that butthole? Hey, butthole, butthole, butthole.
Right.
And you can't help but then look at the butthole, because everyone is talking about the butthole. And
right. But before you get into it, though, I do want to say, for many of us that have been in the industry for a long time, we know this butthole. Like, we saw this butthole,
like,
years and years ago. And we're like, ew, we don't like this butthole.
This,
and everyone's like, whatever. This is
in
how
the
buttholes
ocean for
are.
Many millennia. This is not a new butthole, but I think.
It's not a new butthole. We know this butthole. We said before we didn't like this butthole, and we were all told this is how buttholes are.
Right.
So, butthole.
So, like, it's not necessarily the invention of the wheel here, but I think
right
now, with the
I'm
way
gonna
that
let you
our
have
society
your
is structured, people have opinions, and they want to, I don't want to say talk about, but talk at a subject with a certain level of presumed clarity and understanding of the severity of it. But anyway, apparently one of the co-founders was cited in an article that went out where he talked about 100-hour work weeks, which, you know, for most people who have a general 9-to-5, you know, being full-time, you're full...
Also, let's be clear here. One of the co-founders of...
Rockstar.
Thank you. Well, just make sure that you have everybody aboard the same train that you're that you're going down.
So, yeah, one of the Hauser brothers site was cited in an article that where he literally talked about 100-hour work weeks and didn't go into any elaborate detail after that. So, of course, those who read it were like, poor working conditions? Oh, my God. And I mean, granted, I think about
Wait,
a week later.
Game companies have 100-hour work weeks?
Right. Where, I mean, the general person, like, your full-time work week is 40. I mean, depending on...
It's supposed to be.
Right.
But
then he later properly got it quoted and discussed that he was talking particularly about the writing team, and that period of 100-hour work week was for 3 weeks, like several months back. But still, he took the seed, he planted it in the most fertile, shitty soil, and out sprang the vine of you know, public opinion, and boy did it spread, and it spread fast. And I mean, most of these houses have a lot of policies, you know, and NDA agreements and things, so that people who are working there cannot
talk about their conditions.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's very much like working for the government and having a clearance. If you have it,
there's a whole bunch of shit that you can't talk about to anybody at any point in time.
Or disclose unless asked. And even then, you can only give very deliberate, direct answers. You cannot embellish or...
And in many times, you have to actually ask for permission to actually respond in any way.
Right.
To begin with.
And a lot of these companies operate in a very similar fashion to that.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first time in forever, with that backlash from that article... Rockstar opened up their policies about their employees on social media and allowed them to talk openly, freely, and candidly about their work experience, which, mm-hmm. you know, no, you don't do that. No, it's a trap. Mm-mm. It's a trap. You a white girl in a horror movie and you're at the door or stairs and you
had sex with somebody.
Like just recently, and the key, ma, it's happening. And yeah. either you keep your mouth shut and you go through that door and you live, or you open up, you're candid, and you run up them stairs and you get gutted. So, like, what choice do you have?
Like but, a fish.
But at the end of the day, several people who worked for the company were approached by this particular journalist and did speak to and their public account, their personal accounts in the situation. And he then wrote it all up for Kotaku, and this article is sitting up on Kotaku. And while they kept everything anonymous, which I think is the smartest thing, because I think the biggest thing is there's a lot of fear of repercussion. Even though it's been publicly stated that there wouldn't be, that doesn't necessarily mean that there wouldn't be any indirect repercussions for
correct.
The amount of candidness one would give or did give. Mm-hmm. I think he handled the animosity of all of the people who were willing to speak on behalf of or against of, like, they did a great courtesy to. But I mean, I think that this one is just a culture that, like, I think a lot of Dev Houses do. And this is not the first time that we've heard of, like, Crunch. But,
right. So we got to talk about Crunch. We really do. So, because...
Yeah.
I'm going to jump in. Because, just for a second. Because, you know, we've been aware. We both know quite a few people that work both for development houses, production houses, publishing houses, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, doing this podcast for as long as we've been to a lot of industry events. We have a lot of industry friends, right? Both in big houses and small houses, as well as on the indie side, right? And we've known about Crunch for a long time. And we've heard, you know, decent stories about being in Crunch, and we've heard horrendous stories. Okay, this is not the first time
I think it's essentially kind of like a seesaw. Like, you're going to get a very bell curve-ish pool over a certain amount of time. And I mean...
Well, I think
Crunch just happens around the board, and it just depends on... The development house, the production house, the amount of people they have, and the ability to even do Crunch. And I mean, if you're in school and you have a paper and it's due on Wednesday and you've been working at it, and like you're now 2 days away and you're only like maybe 20% into it, well then yes, you're gonna like burn the midnight oil. So like the crunch mentality is something that we as people have done.
Right. Idea of Crunch isn't anything that is just, you know, respective to the video game industry. Every business has Crunch in some way, shape, or form. When you have a new product rolling out, you have updates that you're doing, projects are happening. Every project has a crunch period at some point. The difference is the expectations of what happens with your workforce during those crunch periods. That's where I think there are some things that are accepted as norm and allowed to happen in the video game industry that don't necessarily happen to the same extreme in others.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think that also depending on, like, I mean, I think particularly in Rockstar's case where they've been like one of the most secretive, mm-hmm. like, you know, dev houses and production companies, like, they keep their things completely under lock and key. And I mean, when you have one of the most successful games of like all effing time, Like, there are precautions you have to make. However, I think there's this weird unspoken standard where, you know, when you make games of that caliber, that, you know, the higher ups are like, what can we do to maintain this momentum? And I think when that happens, there's this weird shady aspect where, you know, because, like, in the article, it's discussed that, like, oh, no, you know, overtime is completely, like, not mandatory. And while, you know, their HR lady was clearly like, oh, yeah, we have never forced anyone to work overtime. And then you hear accounts where it clearly is like, they did not say you have to, but, oh, God, if you didn't, you got the walk of shame, you got daggers. You know, and it was clearly implied that if you weren't willing to put in the same effort as, you know, X, Y, and Z, there are five people who were interviewing who will do it, hands down.
Right. So one of the things, you know, because I read some of the accounts from the Rockstar thing, and many of them rung true. You know, I think the first big time that we, as a community, as far as the people, consumers, buying games, heard about crunch and some poor working conditions was the big EA blowout fallout that came out, I think, like 4 or 5 years ago, and that started making people aware. I think that there's a couple of things that are in play, right? When you look at anybody that's had success with a title, there's always that immediate pressure because everybody is ultimately beholden to a board of shareholders who want even more profits and even more money to, you know, meet the expectation or blow past the expectation, right?
Yeah.
And then you have managers that are like, okay, we can either meet the expectation or blow past it. It's kind of like, you remember in, what was it? Was it Office Space with the flare?
Yeah.
I can't remember, but you know, there's the bare minimum of flair that you can do and like, hey, this is what's required. But, you know, some people choose to do more and those people are treated differently, looked at differently and those kinds of things. You know, I personally in the workforce and I don't work in the game industry yet, but I have absolutely been part of teams where it's okay, we have this project and we're up on crunch and we got to get this delivered. And there are people that at 5 o'clock walk out the door and the rest of us are here burning the midnight oil to make the thing happen on time. And they're absolutely just as a human being, you're like, wow, I'm here putting in this effort, doing the above and beyond, because this is what we do to be successful. And there are people who aren't here and I'm not getting paid overtime because I'm salaried.
Right.
And I'm just expected to be here because the expectation from above me is that this project will be delivered on time. And so we do whatever we have to deliver that project
right
on time. And when you're dealing with, you know, the game industry, which has such tight windows. And I think, like many corporations, for many things, are understaffed. So you have too many people wearing too many hats. You force a culture of burnout. You force a culture of go, 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 do, 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 get it done, get it done, get it done, breathe. Unfortunately, on the back end for the game industry, it's once you get to rollout, there's a high probability that your team is gone and your job is actually gone after that. And
yeah,
you're going to be struggling to find a new position and put yourself right back into the, I am only here for this project and I got to burn through this project and I got to, you know, get all the hours that I can and get all the money that I can and hopefully maybe get this thing to, you know, GM and out to public in a way that it is so successful that the company realizes that they don't want to let any of the people go that made this project happen. You know, the recount that I was reading just in this Rockstar piece that really made me upset, and it was something that I didn't realize, and I think that it's a policy that, you know, if any other company has, it should be a teachable moment for them to maybe look at their policies, was I didn't realize that at Rockstar, if you were working on a game and you ended up leaving the company either because you were let go, laid off, or you quit before the game released, your name wasn't included in the credits.
Yep.
And that to me is a hugely shitty thing to do.
I agree.
And they came out and said, like, no, we believe that, like, if you're here from the beginning through the end, then you deserve to be credited. But if you're here and you leave, like, the week before, we're not going to include your name in the process. And I'm like, that.
And unfortunately, the credits, like at the end of the day, like when you go to a movie or you watch a show on TV and like at the end, like you don't pay attention to those credits. Like to us as a consumer, like we generally give zero. Mm-hmm. Like, actually, I mean, in all honesty, up until fairly recently, because of circumstances and stuff, like, I gave zero about any of that. And I mean, I think now with like Patreons and stuff where people can contribute, like people will now look forward to seeing credits if there's something, if it's something that they've invested in. Like,
see, I've always watched the credits, but that's just because I realize that for whatever thing that I'm watching,
like
a shit ton of people put in a shit ton of time
of their life
to make it happen. So,
and I think, like I said, with this whole Patreon thing, like I think it's shining light on an unsung hero in all of this media, because here are these people who it is their job to entertain us, and they spend their lives making digestible art and content for us in the consumer market. And like, you know, we don't get to say our, like, our thanks comes from the sales of whatever like ticket got us into that show or allowed us to, you know, consume that media. But like, there's no personal validation. Like, I couldn't go to, you know, like, the likelihood that I would bump into, like, a rock star employee on the street, because, one, they can't really discuss that they work there, so, like, they can't even, you know, get that recognition. But if I happen to come across someone, like, I think now I'd be like, oh my god, you're a scripter? Oh my god, like, you did that FMV? Like, because now I'm learned and shit, and I understand some stuff. Like, I would be like, oh my god, like, I love everything that you guys do as a, like, I, like, there's a disconnect between them and their fans and their audience and their consumer base and all of that.
I think that it's more than just Patreon, so I don't want to give Patreon the credit for that. No,
but
that.
I think it's putting that more in the forefront, places like that where people will, you know,
I just think that it's support. It's the content creator space in general. You know, you now, because you have personal relationships with various YouTubers and Twitch streamers and Mixer streamers and people who are creating their own content and, you know, are going out of their way to thank their supporters, that you are more aware of it. I would say, you know, it just depends on kind of where you sat.
I think the culture has shifted now, where we're now seeing more of that. There's more visibility.
I would say
there.
That the younger generation is seeing that more. What I'm saying is the creator culture is making it an apparent thing for millennials, because there's so many more of you that are creators.
Yeah.
You know, before really digital distribution, when you had just TV and movie and music, big production, you couldn't really do it on your own and get out there in the world and be seen in the world. That, you know, unless you were part of the industry, yeah, you gave zero. Like, when you left a movie theater, many people didn't stay through the credits, right?
Yeah.
Like, so many different movie houses had to put things after the credits to try and get
stingers,
people to stick around.
To stay. Yeah.
Because as soon as credits started rolling, people started walking out of the theater. Now, I've always been a person that I always stayed in the theater to watch credits. When I played video games, you know, before YouTube was even a thing, you know, when I played video games, I always watched the credits at least one time through, because I knew and I had the appreciation to begin with that this thing that I was doing, this thing that I was watching or listening to or playing, that a lot of people put in a lot of time and effort. And so if nothing else, since I made it to the end of this thing, I needed to do the honor of, even if I don't remember all of their names or what departments that they worked in, I am going to sit here and I'm going to take the few minutes that it takes for the credits to roll so that they get that recognition, because they're not going to get it otherwise. They got paid. Right. Many of them either were laid off shortly after it ran, moved to a different department, started on a different game, maybe got a bonus, maybe didn't.
Maybe not.
You know, like, as I look at more and more productions, as I'm watching credits, there are more and more production babies that are happening. And in the back of my mind, because I know how the industry works, I'm like, and how many of those people didn't get to spend initially the time with those babies because they were under crunch? Like, that's where my brain goes. Especially when I see, like, I can't remember if it was God of War, the remake, the last game, or if it was Uncharted. But I remember seeing some credit in the game where they had like six columns of production babies. And I was like okay.
There is this line where, I mean, like, I think specifically with like millennials and stuff now, where, like, you know, when we go out into this workforce, like, we clearly want jobs that will allow us, you know, cost of living and allow us to live. Like,
right.
And not,
and
like
not just work.
Not
and go
work
to sleep.
And not paycheck, but like actually have a tangible concept of what work and living is. Mm-hmm. You know, so we're always looking for the best work-life balance for whatever, you know, part of our life that we're in, because not all of us get married. Not all of us have kids. So, you know, mm-hmm. like, for that millennial who, you know, has a partner but doesn't have kids, you know, and that partner is also very, you know, driven in their work, like, I don't see any problem with that. But, you know, when you've got people, men, because, I mean, predominantly you'll see far more men in, you know, game development and production mm-hmm. houses than women. Granted, they
but
are
But we're working
there.
On changing that. We're working on changing that.
But, you know, but here are all these, you know, youngish men who are now starting, you know, this role of fatherhood. And for the, like, the primitive times that people like to talk about in nostalgia and stuff, they're not a part of. Because they're making this conscious sacrifice for a product. Mm-hmm. When, and then at the end of that, because, I mean, I think there were several accounts where there were several people, former employees, particularly of Rockstar, who, you know, missed the birth of their children. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, their wives were, you know, at home for, like, that little bit of maternity leave. And, I mean, U.S. does not have the best practices for maternity.
Yeah, we need to work on that, too.
You know, I digress on that. But, like, all these tangible moments that these young fathers are missing because of work.
You know, and you know, moms,
and,
too.
And moms, too. But, I mean, like, mm-hmm. the cost of what that does on a family unit emotionally... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And mentally, and then, I mean, on top of that, physical exhaustion, mm-hmm. like, they're running the gambit.
Now, that being said, I do want to give credit where credit is due. I think that since the EA thing, that there are a lot of companies and organizations that kind of took a hard look at themselves to implement some changes. You know, Ubisoft has a phenomenal paternity and maternity leave program and, you know, flexible schedule. Microsoft's the same way. I think, you know, some of the bigger houses are, you know, again, did a hard look at themselves and are working towards making things better. They're not perfect. Okay, I want to say that right out the gate. They are not perfect. But there are definitely companies out there that have made effort to be right. better.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, just this whole thing with looking at, you know, just some of the stories that we heard when Grand Theft Auto 5 went out, right? Which, Grand Theft Auto 5, hugely successful. $1 billion successful.
Still with online, still making okay. money.
Still making bank, right?
Right.
And you look at some of the stories that came out around then of just, you know, how crunch was handled, how different people were handled, and some of the missteps that marketing made in allowing some people to say some really dumb shit. Right?
Yep.
Okay. Like, that happens because people don't have the handlers they should to protect themselves from themselves. Okay. But I do think that it's not just something that's pervasive in this industry. It's pervasive in other industries. So I just want to make sure that, you know, we're fair here.
Yep.
And we, you know, call an ace.
Yep.
Okay.
And a spade a spade. Absolutely.
Okay. Like, they are what they are. Okay. And I think that there are people who are trying to make headway in the industry and across industries, okay? Like, this is not a problem that just is pervasive in the video game industry. Okay, you can look at big professional industries across the board. Pick a vertical. There's not enough women represented at the top. There's not enough people of color represented at the top. You know, the same thing happens in the video game industry. There's not, you know, especially in North America, there's not the appreciation, as you said, for family unit time needed when people are doing the life things, you know, having children, moving into a new home, the stuff that's stressful on top of your work day. It is not productive, really, at the end of a project. If you have everybody on your team working 12-hour days, you will have burnout and productivity drops and more mistakes are made. And it really is better to be more organized and to push things back when you're comfortable with pushing things back and being comfortable to push things back to be like, no, we can't burn this. We're not going to get what we want out of it. And I think that's part of the reason why you see now more so than before, more and more games pushing back their release.
Right.
Than burning people to meet a deadline that is really unrealistic. Because, like, shit happens. Tech fails. A thing that you wanted to do, you just can't get working in the time that you have allotted to do it. And so you have to make the decision. And I think before it started becoming as visible to the consumer, what crunch does to the end product, what it does to the production teams, how the game industry happens where there isn't this, you know, security safety net for people working on these games that go on to make hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars. Before we had that visibility, you didn't see games get pushed back. What you saw was crunch times get even more elongated.
Yeah.
You know, we look at the culture that's happening, you know, in the East of, you know, salary men working themselves almost to death, sleeping underneath their cubes, yep. getting up, continuing to work, being so dead dog tired that they fall asleep out in public. And that is just an accepted cultural thing that we really do have to, I think, as a whole, especially in the West, but across all industries, look at ourselves and go, is that what we want to become? I think because where it ends up for me is the only thing that I really have any negative thing feeling about in this industry is that it appears to me as a consumer and as someone on the bubble of the industry that people are valued for what they produced and not for being people.
No, not even necessarily that, because I kind of want to step back from that, because it seems like a lot of the culture kind of, it doesn't matter if you cleared all your bugs. Like, you've been given X amount of bugs and you get your bugs done in the time provided. They want butts in seats, work that's not even necessarily your work being done. So, like, I've heard many stories of people who, you know, are sales guys for you know, smaller companies and even big companies, that after their big project management thing was done, that they were asked to go in and do QA stuff when they're salaried. And, like, there's this expectation of whatever hat you are in, that's not the only job you're going to do. And I think, you know, if it gets to a point where you really need all hands on deck, there needs to be an acknowledgement of, okay, this is something that the whole company needs to do. And there is this understanding, but there's also this thing that incentivizes and encourages that, you know, this is a group decision and a group action. And that it's not a, oh, if he does it, then I have to do it. Because if I don't do it, I'm going to get penalized and scrutinized. And it might not be right now, but it's going to happen. And then you are all being corralled by fear and not the passion of delivering a polished product.
Right.
You're doing it under a duress. And
what you're talking about is a huge culture shift. Yeah. And it's one that has to happen.
Yeah, it does.
It really has to happen. And it's not just in the game industry.
I mean, it's just across the board in all types of work.
Absolutely. But I think that, you know, as consumers, it is on us to advocate for the creators for that to happen.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that's kind of where, you know, your Patreon remark lines up with. And also, you know, you look at any of the platforms where any person can become a brand, right?
Right.
And market themselves and sell themselves.
I mean, it's the same with YouTubers and stuff. Very much with the whole brand, you know, thing where, you know, you've got you have hundreds, thousands of people supporting you on YouTube. And there's this, we're seeing so many more, you know, content creators who are delivering content daily, burning themselves out to a point where they literally, like, have to make a video where they're pretty much having mental breakdowns because they need to take 3 days off.
Right. And, like, the monetization that's going to hit them and the loss of followers that's going to hit them, it terrifies them.
Right.
But they have to do something for their, you know, own mental health. So all I'm saying is, you know, I am 100% in agreement with you. What I am calling for is, as consumers, that we have to support these content creators across the board, and not just the content creators that are on streaming platforms. We also have to be aware of the people that are creating, you know, the big disc content that we are consuming, and advocate for them. You know, it is our dollars that make games profitable. And so if as a whole, we're like, hey, I'm going to give you this money for this game, Rockstar, but, like, I'm going to take to social and I'm going to tweet at you regularly. Like, okay, so, like, show me how you took care of everybody that made this game. No, Rockstar, I really want you to acknowledge all the people that worked on this game, whether they're still with the company or not, because they need that credit for their resume. There are so many people that have to say, you know, I worked on a game, but I wasn't credited. I worked on this game, but I wasn't credited. Like, I know so many people in the industry that I'm like, oh, wow, you worked on their game. And then you're like, oh, yeah, I was at Ninja Theory, but I wasn't credited because I left before the project ran, or I left because of this, or I was let go before this launch, so I wasn't included. That does a lot to someone's psyche and their soul, because before they left, trust and believe, they put in hours and hours of blood, sweat, and tears.
Sacrifice, and all for what?
Recognition.
Literally 12 to 18 characters at the base end of your disc.
at the end of the day, just asking for the recognition of the work that was put in, regardless of whether they made it to the finish line or not, is important. You know, this is one place where I feel like, yeah, a participation medal is deserved for everybody that participated.
Yep, I agree.
Okay, if you can give special thanks to, you know, the head honcho producers who, yes, run the company as a whole, but didn't really code or, you know, didn't really show up for marketing the project in the credits, you can give credit to the person who was working as an intern for 6 months or a whole year because they came back for two semesters on this game. You can spare the line in the credits for them. Crunch happens everywhere, but there are things that you can do that alleviate some of the emotional stress, that dissipate some of the burnout, and it is worth it to us as consumers if companies do those things to take care of our content creators that are making these elaborate worlds and amazing characters that we fall in love with that make us fans of these brands and these stories and these characters, you know. And so I'm not saying that crunch has to be eliminated, because you can't.
No.
Like, there are just some times where in order to get something done, you got to have all hands on deck and you got to put in the extra effort. You got to go above and beyond.
But I think policies could be amended and maybe there could be some type of checks or balances in place to, like, make it so, like, there's a, I don't want to say, like, there's a level of, like, proper use versus misuse. Like, but I think there's nothing wrong with having, like, a checks and balances to, like, make sure that, like, if things get to a point where, like, it seems far more detrimental in a certain aspect, to find a way to mitigate that, or, like, you know, I think they just need to show that they care about the people doing the work and not just the bugs being fixed and the butts in seats, because there are people attached to those butts.
Exactly. There are people attached to those butts. So when we do get Red Dead Redemption 2, definitely expect us to talk about it. But that's all the time that we have for the podcast this week. I want to thank you for listening to all the stuff that we had to say, because we had a lot.
Too much.
Maybe. Like, so much. Probably too much. But, you know, sometimes you got to just put it on the table and see what happens. If you enjoyed this podcast, then please make sure that you check out our podcast on our website, www.electricsisterhood.com. You can check out our entire archive of episodes there, as well as other great things that we're writing and the entire content creation team at Esh is contributing on games, comic books, manga, and more right there on our website. You can bookmark it. Please do. You can also get our RSS feed. So as soon as we put out new articles, you can grab a hold of them. You can also get the RSS feed directly for our podcast right on our website. And you can find our podcast in a plethora of places, starting with iTunes, either on the desktop or through the iOS application on your Apple device, by searching through the podcast application for the Eshcast and subscribing, or again, through desktop, search for Eshcast or Electric Sisterhood and subscribe to our podcast. We appreciate every new subscribe to our show. We appreciate every new review. You can also find our show on bognetwork.com, as well as some other amazing shows around the nerddom in general, anime, Trek, games in general. Please make sure to check out VogNetwork.com, bookmark it, and also the great shows that are happening over there. Our show actually airs on Tuesday nights on VOG, so please make sure that you check them out. You can also get our show through Stitcher Radio, Google Play, and pretty much every podcast aggregator that's out there in the world. So subscribe, let us know that you love us. Engage with us on our social. We are on Instagram at ESH News, on Twitter at ESH News, and Facebook at facebook.com/Land of Esh. If you enjoy what we do, then you'll definitely enjoy all of the great content that all of our content creators are making. That includes our homie KBD, King Baby Duck, over at B3Crew.com, and his podcast, No Borders, No Race. That includes our man, Hamsterman2049, streaming live on Twitch, twitch.tv/Hamsterman2049, and writing all kinds of great stuff up at SmashedRook.com. one of my favorite humans on the planet, Phil the Issues Guy, with Phil's recap and review on YouTube. Subscribe, hit the bell, make sure you're getting those notifications when he puts out new shows. Some of my favorite recaps on the web. Definitely make sure that you check him out. And then last, but certainly not least, the homies over at NerdCrave.com, keeping you up to date with all the stuff that nerds crave, from comic books, anime, manga, and more. If it's nerdy at all, the nerds over at NerdCrave.com are talking about it. So check out all of our sites, bookmark them all, find us on social, follow us. If there's something you want us to check out, you just want to say hi, hit us up, send us a DM, get into our tweets, send us a private message on Facebook, send up a smoke signal. We love hearing from you guys, we love engaging with our community, and we love talking about the stuff that we do. So with that, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next time, folks.
Titties.